Okay, today's daf in Masechet Yoma, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei. You guys better get your Gemara Sukkah ready, because we seem to be disastrously approaching a precipice. Anyway, so we're up to Tanya, Rebbe Omer. Last three words. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, that all of these shiurim that we've been talking about, we've got mostly, shiurim that have to do with achila are almost entirely a shiur of one kizayit, right? Now, there is a place where it's not a kizayit, and instead, it's a kibetza. And that would have to do with eating foods that would make you tummy. So, chutz bitumat ochlin, sheshina hakatub b'mashma'an, v'shinua chachamim b'shiuran. So let me just give you a little bit of background to this issue, because we've spoken about this many times, but there's a lot of confusion, and part of the issue is this. There were apparently two gezeiros. This is the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. Remember that when we were learning the Yud Ches Dvorim, that these were the 18 gezeiros that we spoke about in Masechet Shabbat, so over there we had a gezeira about eating foods that are tummy. And so we said, ochol, ochol, rishon, esheni, ochol, ochol, esheni, it's also considered to be esheni, and so on. So over there, it was referring to, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, a din of eating food that would be mitame you and aser you from touching truma. However, there was a much older gezeira that went back to antiquity to such an extent, as Tosis points out, that our Gemara actually makes the mistake of believing that it's a d'oraisa. And that is called tumat gviya. And the original tumat gviya only had to do with the iser of eating truma, not touching truma. And there were two completely different bases for this gezeira. And what we're talking about over here, that the shear is to be metame your body to the extent that it would be usser to eat truma in the original gezeira. So over there, we had a different shear, and we're going to talk about those shiurim. And then we also have the shear of bichlal. What is the extent of the actual tuma that will be metame other ochlin? But remember that midiraisa, nothing can be metame an adam except for an av hatuma. So certainly, that would not be an issue. So we're only talking about a d'oraisa. But when it's talking about over here, legabe ochlin, here it's just talking about the tuma of ochlin, not in terms of your eating, but in terms of what would be the shear of kabbalah's tuma. And the reason that it's different, as we're going to see, is because instead of saying any food, the Torah talks about, when it says how food could be metame other food, it says, mikola ochel asher ye achel, asher yavo alav mayim yitma. So what would be the shear of ochlin? So normally I would say, well, ochlin, the shear of ochlin is how much you eat. And the definition of how much you eat is a kezayit. But over here it doesn't say food. It says, kola ochel asher ye achel, which obviously is adding something or other. Food which is eaten. I mean, isn't that what food means? Food which is eaten. So basically, we end up saying that the shear of tumas ochlin is a shear of a kibetza. Then we have the other shear of actually eating ochlin tumeim, which we'll discuss in a moment. Now, remember, we have a big machlokus about whether that's a reference to giving tuma to something else, or whether that is a reference to being mekabel tuma. So this we've had all along. Big machlokas in Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim, and there's other shitas as well that are mechalik between Eichlin of Chulin and Eichlin of Kachim. Fine. We won't get into that here, but what we're talking about on this first level is Kabbalah's Tuma of Eichlin, or the ability to be Mitame other Eichlin. That's the machlokas, and it's not a kezayit. It's actually a kibetza. And where did we get the idea that we should be more, change the shear of Eichlin, that it's not going to be mitame bepoches mikabetza? That's because of the fact that the Torah used this funny language of kol ochel asher yachel. That's what in the end the Gemara is going to come out. But for some strange reason, Rebbe had to say, then I'll prove it to you. V'raya l'davar, a proof to my concept that when the Torah changes the way that it refers to something, we should use that change as also changing the shear of what that refers to. My raya is Yom Kippur. Because remember that by Yom Kippur, instead of saying don't eat, Torah never said don't eat, it just said kol ha-nefesh asher lo tu'uneh. And therefore, from that, we ended up with a completely different concept, which was the Kotevet Hagasa. And that shows you that a change in language in the Torah is also mechayev, a change in shiur. So now let's take a look at understanding what Rebbe said. First, the Gemara wants to know, when you say that the Torah changed its language in Yom Kippur, what do you mean? Mai shina katub b'mashma'o. Because since it says, kol ha-nefesh asher lo tu'uneh, instead of saying lo tochlu, and what was the corresponding shinu chachamim b'shiurea, what is the difference? Because they said that the shir is a kotevet, instead of saying the normal shir. And the normal shir, of course, is a kizayit. So I don't get it, but why do we need a proof? I mean, what? Why is the Yom Kippur situation a bigger proof than bringing a raya directly from the pasuk of kol ha-ochel asher ye'achel? I mean, is there something in that pasuk that is more clear that it's a shinui? Yes, says the Gemara, it is. Because if you would have just brought it from the pasuk of kol ha-ochel asher ye'achel, hava mina urcha dekrohu, I might have said, the change that we make in the shir from a kizayit to a kibetza, that's not because of the fact that the pasuk changed its language. There's other bases for that, or maybe it's a direct result of a halacha l'meisha mi-Sinai. I would have said that that's just because sometimes the pasuk speaks that way, you know, and that's not considered to be a shinui. But when I come along to Yom Kippur, and over there, I mean, it's obvious. You never said don't eat. I mean, you can't make a bigger shinui than that. So over there, I understand that. For sure, it must be related to the difference. So now, where do we get the idea that it's a kibetza? So tumat ochlinj, it's a kibetza. You've been assuming, you said all along, since the Torah changed its language, therefore, that's what Rebbe said. So I'd like to look at that a little bit more closely. What is that language change? And what is that change in the shir? So tumas ochlin, the shir is a kibetza. Where does that come from? Omer Rabbi Abo, Omer Rabbi Elazar, di Omer Akro, mikol ha-ochel asher ye'achel. That is a very strange way of saying things. You know what that means? Mikol ha-ochel asher ye'achel means something which is edible that comes out of another thing that's edible. That's the point. And what would that be? An egg. An egg comes out of a hen. And so both of them are edible. So it's very cute. Mikol ha-ochel asher ye'achel. And therefore, as it says in Masechet Avot, ha-foch ba de-kula ba, we finally have an answer to which came first, the chicken or the egg. Because the Torah answers, mikol ha-ochel asher ye'achel. So now this must be that the shear of a kibetza is yotze from the tarnagolet. Okay. I don't even get a smile, nothing, forget it, that's it. I'm going to just turn into one of these boring daf yomi sayers and never say anything that is in any way interesting. Okay, this is what you want, this is what you'll get. All right, in any event, this year is kibetzas tarnagolet. Now, what makes you say that it's a kibetzas tarnagolet? I mean, it might be a kid. Doesn't a kid come from a mommy? And the mommy is edible, and the kid is edible, so maybe the shear of Tumas Ochlin should be the shear of a gidi. I don't know. I mean, that's the same thing. No, I mean, it's not really ready to be eaten yet. We're talking about something that is ready to be eaten on the spot. So a kid, I mean, you'd have to shecht it first. Well, what about if it's a ben bekua? A ben bekua is still a cow, an egg that's found inside of its mother's uterus. You shech the mother. And now we're saying that the child is kosher without shechita, because the mother's shechita is a shechita for the child as well. So then it would be, like you say, it would be ochel from another ochel without the need for shchita because it's immediately called an ochel. Yeah, but you can't really eat it yet because you have to get rid of the dam. There's no heter on dam of a ben bekua. So you would still need kriya. The din is kor o motziyat damo. So you can't call it a food yet. Mashenken, an egg, you can call a food. Okay, so you want to say it's an egg. What makes you say it's an egg of a tarnago? Maybe it's an egg of this massive Bar Yochani, and the Bar Yochani was so big, remember, that the Bar Yochani once laid an egg, that's what we had in the Gemara, and that egg, it landed in the sea, and the sea made a tidal wave, and there were 60 cities that were destroyed by this tidal wave because of the size of the Bar Yochanis. I mean, so maybe only Eichlin will only be Tame with an egg which is the size of a Bar Yochani egg, 5,000 bushels worth, right? I don't know. I mean, where does it say anything about a tarnagolet? Yeah, but that's because tafasta meruba lo tafasta, tafasta mua tafasta. I mean, remember, we always have to apply Occam's razor. I mean, you can't get more out of something than the minimum that is it answers the requirements. And the minimum over here would be a normal egg, not the egg of a Bar Yochani, for heaven's sakes. Okay, so then why a tarnagolet egg? How about a tiny bird? Maybe Beata de Tziporta. I mean, once you're telling me tafasta meruba, so then a tarnagolet is too big. Maybe it's deserter tuva. It's a tiny bird, which is much, much smaller than a tarnagolet. Okay, so now there's got to be another approach. It can't be from ochel mitoch ochel. So what is it? So Rabbi Abahu, who was the one that had originally quoted his own Rebbe, which Rabbi Elazar, so he saw that this was a problematic approach because we were unable to really define why we say Beitza Tarnagolet. So Rabbi Abahu said his own pshat. Rabbi Abahu did de omer that the loshon of mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel means any food that you can eat in a single gulp. So if you're able to eat the ochla bevatachat, whatever you could swallow at one point, that is what the shear is. And the Chachomim then made some experiment, and they discovered that ein beit habliya machazik yoter mi beit ha'tarnagolet, so that would be the size that you would be able to swallow in one gulp. And because of that, that became the shear, which is the shear of a beitza tarnagolet. It just happens, it comes from the same pasuk, but from a completely different meaning to that pasuk. So therefore, I still stick with the pasuk my Rebbe brought, but differently than you say it. It's because of the fact that you can't swallow it at one time. You know, it's interesting that there were many many arguments about the idea of the tzlach, and the Chazon Ish paskins like the tzlach, and some of the other achronim, that the famous din, that the size of the beitzim at the time of the Gemara was double the volume of our beitzim, right? So one of the big kashas that was asked on the Chazon Ish and the Tzlach was, how in the world could, if it used to be double the size, how could we say that people... You mean the Beis HaBliya was double the size? Is that what you also believe, that people were double the size? I mean, because we have all of the measurements in the Gemara that make it very clear that they weren't double the size of the mikveh, and the way we relate the shear of the Beis to the size of the mikveh, and so on. So that doesn't make any sense. So the Chazon Ish gave the obvious answer, namely that volume of a sphere is a function of the cube of the radius. It does not take much of a change at all to double the volume, right? Once you're dealing with a cube. So that means that the size of the Beit HaBliya would be almost exactly the same, even if the size of the Beitza was, in terms of its volume, was doubled. And not only that, but he points out that when we're talking about Bli'a, we don't mean to keep an egg with its shell in the Beis HaBliya. We mean a chewed up egg. And if you take a look at the swallowing reflex is a lengthy thing. It's not like, you know, people, says the Chazon Ish, people think that what we're talking about is putting a whole egg inside of your pesach pli and swallowing that whole egg at one time. No, that's not what it means. It means chewing up an egg and then being able to swallow it, which is a lengthy process in a sense, and it's still called bevat achat. So Memela, he didn't think that this was a problem at all. Anyway, just an interesting aside. Omar Rabbi Elazar. Ha'ochel chelev bizman hazeh. Somebody eats chelev by accident, bizman hazeh, and he finds out that it was chelev. He should make a note for himself that when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, he has to bring a korban, but he should not just write that when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, I will bring a korban. He should write precisely the amount of chelev that he ate. Why? Because maybe another Beis Din will come, and when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, then we'll have a reliable Beis Din that will tell us that our measurements of the shear were completely crazy. What does that mean? It'll be marba b'shurim. When you say marba b'shurim, I mean, does it mean you should write down how much you ate? Because maybe the Beis Din will say that you're b'chuyav a korban on a kezayit katan. So actually, even though you ate bizman hazeh less than the kezayis beinoni, you should write down, I ate a kezayis beinoni. And therefore, if the Beis Din comes along and says that even eating a small kezayit, so then you would know you'd have to bring a korban. Is that what it means? Can't be what it means. Ve'atanya. Asher lo te'asena bishkaga ve'ashem. So it says over there, when somebody does something bishkaga, which would not be done, and he is ashem, so then he brings his korban chatas. But what does this teach? That davka hashav miyidiyato, asher lo te'asena, means he would not have done it if he would have known better. So davka, if he would have believed that this was aser, and this was the shear that was aser, so then he's chayav a carbon, maybe carbon ashigagato. But if he would have been fully informed, and informing him nonetheless would not have made the difference of his eating it, because he would not have been informed of an iser, so then he's not called a shav miyidiyato. And lo shav miyidiyato eno mivi korban ashigigato. So the fact that when he did it, what he did was defined by the halacha as something that is not the shear of the iser of achilas chelev. So even if a Beis Din at a later time ends up changing the shear of a chiyuv, it does not change the nature of his shav miyidiyato, because he would not have been shav miyidiyato. Now, the obvious question is, why is the shav miyidiyato defined by the current Beis Din? In other words, why don't we say that if he would have been informed that in another 20 years there's going to be a change, that he would have been shav miyidiyato? Why does it have to be a shav miyidiyato from the current situation? This is a very rich discussion among the achronim. Some even engaging the issue of the ideas in Hurias of somebody who eats Alpi Beis Din, because over here the Lo Shav Miyidiyato would be Alpi Beis Din. He was not a Lo Shav Miyidiyato. So in that case, he wouldn't be Chayav Chatas. And there's obvious other approaches as well. But okay, just things, these are like very fascinating sugyas. So if it was Lo Shav Miyidiyato, Eino Mevi Korban Al Shigigato, so then it can't mean that he would then have to bring a korban if at the time that he ate it, he would not have had to bring a korban. Maybe what Rebbe Lozer meant to say was the opposite, that the Lo Mechayev Korban Adika Kizai is Gadol. Suppose the Beis Din at the time that he wants to come to the Beis HaMikdash and bring his korban chatas, the Beis Din will say, sorry, sir, you cannot bring a korban chatas because it's chulin ba'azara. You guys at your time believed that you would be chayev even for a kezayis beinani, but you're not chayev for a kezayis beinani. You're only going to be chayev if you ate a kezayis gadol. And therefore, you do not have to bring a korban chatas. And if you bring it, it's going to end up being chulin ba'azara. So we cannot allow you to bring it. That's what he meant. But wait a minute, how did you think he meant anything but? You thought that what? That maybe they would be mechayev you a korban even on a smaller kezayis? So then why would it have said, the Beis Din will be marbe b'shiurin? That's a marbe b'shiurin, that's mima'et b'shiurin. it's going to make a smaller shear. How did you think such crazy avamina anyway? No, we thought it meant Shema Yarbeh. Maybe they will be Marba, the Chiyuv of Karbonis, because of the change that may make in Shiurim that you only have to eat a lesser amount to be Chayiv. So that's what we understood it as possibly meaning. Okay, but anyway, now we're all happy, right? So Shema Yarbeh B'Shiurim means exactly what it says. That is, the Besdin will say you're only going to be chayiv if you ate more, and therefore you can't bring your carbon because it's chulin, and therefore you should write it down to make sure that you know that you're able to bring that carbon. That's all it meant. Anyway, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shiurim ve'onashim halakha l'Moshe miSinai. So we know the Shiurim, and we know the Onashim in the Torah from halakha l'Moshe miSinai. Onashim? What are you talking about? Every time there is an onesh in the Torah, it says so in the pasuk. Where do we have halakha l'Moshe miSinai telling us onashim? No. Rabbi Yochanan meant was hachikama shiurim shel onashim halakha l'Moshe miSinai. So in other words, obviously we know what the din is of a mechal Shabbos, right? Okay, but how much do you carry? Let's say a grogeret. Where does it say a grogeret in the Torah? You're going to take out eichlin. So that's what he meant to say. Now, those things are halakha l'Moshe miSinai. And in fact, it says this in a braita. Tanya Rami Yochi, shiurim shel onashim are halakha l'Moshe miSinai. And others say, actually, it was the Beit Din of Ya'abetz, who is Otniel ben Kenaz, according to Chazal. That Beit Din was mitakein them, because remember that Otniel ben Kenaz was the one who was able to reconstruct all of the lost data. And that's what it's going to turn out to be in a moment. Ask the Gemara, how could it be a Beit Din of Ya'abetz that gives us over the dinim of the Diraisa and defines the dinim of the Diraisa? Doesn't it say beferish that Ele ha-mitzvot, only these are the mitzvot asher tziva Hashem et Moshe b'nei Yisro b'har Sinai? That means that from this point on, you can't come up with like new laws. What do you mean you define the shiurim? Yeah, no, of course it doesn't mean that. It means that the shiurim had been halakha l'Moshe miSinai, and they forgot. And remember that that's what Osnio ben Knaz did. Chazru v'yastum, they were mechayev everybody, and they were able to reconstruct the sugya milechatchila.
Okay. The next sugya is fantastic for an achvile, and for everybody would demonstrate every sheath of drinking lulululululululululululululululul as we go through. That would be fantastic.
Oh boy, I should have been forewarned on this one.
I'm being a little bit cheeky.
I was not prepared. Okay, so now the next part of the Mishnah spoke about how much to drink. And what it says was, Hashoteh melolugmav, so if you feel the full lugma of your cheek, your chayev, the shear on Yom Kippur, and that's when you'd be chayev karis. Now, there's some confusion about the meaning of this idea of melolo lugmav. The way the Mishnah Berurah understands the entire sugya is that we do not require your cheeks to be full of liquid. I can't, there's so many contradictions in this. I'll tell you how most people understand it. Most people think that melolugmav means that both of your cheeks are full, and that's the shear of melolugmav, so that it's not just that the mouth is full, but it's that actually your cheeks are full. So that when Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says it doesn't mean v'lo lugmav mamash, what that means is you don't really need to have both of your cheeks actually full. Elokol she'ilu yisalkenu letzad echad v'yera'ekum lo lugmav. If you moved it to one side of your mouth, it would look like your cheeks were full. So therefore, the real meaning of v'lo lugmav is one cheek full. All right. Now, the mashma'ut in the Mishnah Berurah, this is the lashon in the Mishnah Berurah. Lo ba'inan sheyesh shnei halichayim mila'im, eladai sheyesh echad malei ubolet. And Az Yera'e Memela Kilu Shneyan Mileim. It's quite clear that that's the Mishnah Berurah. And that's how he paskins the halacha. It's quite clear that what he's saying is that the melolugmav is a reference to the lechi. It is a reference to your mouth, not your cheeks. It's just that if there's so much liquid in your mouth that you have one cheek that is sticking out, then that is the shiur of what is meant by a full mouth. Because that way it looks, if you've got that much liquid there that you're able to fill your mouth to the extent that you've got this bulging cheek, so then there's got to be enough mashka there that your actual lechi, which is a reference to your jaw, that is full. But never did lugmav mean your cheeks. This is the way the Mishnah Berurah is learning. In which case, there's no real problem over here, because when the Mishnah said melo lugmav, it didn't mean, even bepashtus, it didn't mean two bulging cheeks. It wasn't referring to cheeks. It was referring to your entire mouth from the level of your jaw is completely full of liquid. That's all that it meant. And therefore, when Shmuel was quoted as saying that it doesn't really mean it needs to be completely full to the point where any movement of your mouth would allow liquid to spill all over the place, it just means that if there's enough that you could fill up a cheek, then that is what is meant as your mouth being completely full. Okay, now that's not the standard way of understanding the Gemara, but it seems quite clear that that's how the Mishnah Berurah understands it, la'aloch. So ask the Gemara like this. In the Mishnah, it says, melo lugmav. So how can you read that as saying that one full cheek is melo lugmav? Again, the way that most people read this is, melo lugmav, the question is, that means both cheeks are full. So how can you say only one cheek is full? And the Mishnah is answering, it's kimlo lugmav. It should look like both cheeks are full, which is sort of funny. Again, according to the way we're understanding the Gemara with the Mishnah Berurah, that if it said melolugmav, the mashma'ut is that it would literally have to be a full mouth. And so we're saying that when it says a full mouth, that's a full mouth, basically, when you're able to put all that liquid out on one side. So the Gemara now thinks that what we mean is that we should change the Mishnah to read melolugmav. But that's not true, because look at the Braita. Kama yishtevei chayav, Beit Shammai omrim revi'it, u'Beit Hillel omrim lo lugmav. So according to Beit Shammai, you would be chayav on one revi'is. And according to Beit Hillel, you're chayav kimlo lugmav. And Reb Yud Amr Mishum Reb Eliezer, kimlo lugmav. Reb Yud ben Beter Omer, kidei gimia, enough to be able to swallow. Now, obviously, when Beis Hillel says a halacha, and over here, it's the halacha that says melo lugmav, not kimlo lugmav. So how can you say that our Mishnah says kimlo lugmav, which is what Reb Eliezer said? Who ever heard of pastoring like Reb Eliezer against Beit Hillel? So obviously, when the Mishnah said melo lugmav, it meant melo lugmav, not kimlo lugmav. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, what are you asking? This brisa is a bigger problem than the Mishnah itself. I explained to you that the meaning of melo lugmav in the Mishnah meant du kimna kadesha yera eh. It should look like melo lugmav. So why can't Beis Hillel mean the same thing? Kadesha yera eh kimelo lugmav, right? Well, so then I don't understand. Then you're telling me that Beis Hillel is saying the same thing as Reb Eliezer? I mean, Reb Eliezer says kimelo lugmav. And you're telling me that Beis Hillel actually means kimlo lugmav, so then what's the difference between those two shittas and the braisa? No, there's a big difference between them. Because ikabinayo melo lugmav dachuk. The question is, what do you mean by the real melo lugmav? How full does it have to be? So according to Beis Hillel, it really has to be so full that this is how Rashi understands it. It has to be so full that if you would move it to one side of the cheek, it would be like completely blown up. Masha Einkein, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's just barely enough. You only need enough liquid there that it would look like you have, a good amount of liquid, just enough to fill up your jaw. Matkif la Rav Hoshaya, if that's what it means, we've got a problem. Because if Beit Hillel really only means one cheekful that looks like Melol Lugmav, so then that means that Beit Hillel is being more machmir than Beit Shammai. Because it turns out to be Mikulo Beit Shammai, Umichumre Beit Hillel, and those things were all listed in the Mishnah in Idyot, and this was not included. It does not say anywhere in Idyot that when it comes to how much you need to eat or to drink on Yom Kippur, that Beis Hillel is machmir, it doesn't say that. Because a normal mlolugma is somewhere between a chatzi revias and a full revias. But if you would have both mlolugma literally full, then it would be more than a revias. So then how is it that Beit Shammai is normally l'chumra? So we have to assume that Beit Shammai is more chumra than Beis Hillel, because if Beit Hillel would mean what we thought he meant, two full cheeks, okay? So then Beit Shammai indeed would be much more chumra, because he's saying one revias and Beis Hillel is saying more. But the way you're learning that Beis Hillel is saying only one, so then it turns out that Beis Hillel is more chomer than Beit Shammai, because one could be even less than a revias. And according to Beit Shammai, you're only going to be chayiv if you drink a full revias. So how is it that that was left out of the Mishnah in Idyot? Omar Leis, so they said to Rav Hoshaya, who asked this, because remember that everything is contextual, right? I mean, the issue of what's listed in Mesechet Idyot is always how did Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel respond to the issue that was raised in the Beis Din. That's what Idyot is all about. Now, it turns out that the question that had been asked of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai as to what is the shir on Yom Kippur was asked about Og Melech HaBashan. Not literally, obviously. But the question that was raised in Beis Din was, if a person is very big, and his mlolugmav would be much larger than normal, what would be the chiyav on Yom Kippur? So Beit Shammai says, look, mlolugmav is not going to be a shear for someone who's large. On the contrary, the actual shear is a revias, and that is considered to be a chiyav even for Og Melech HaBashan. And therefore, when Beis Hillel says, no, you need the person's own Melol Lugmav. In which case, if a person has a very large, this is how we paskin, by the way. Right? So in other words, when you're talking about giving someone who's ill drinking on Yom Kippur, which is going to be to give him pochus b'kashir, you first measure his own Melol Lugmav to define the shir. Because it really is a function of that person's Melol Lugmav, you see. So if the question that had been raised in Beis Din was how about somebody who has a large mouth, so then Beit Shammai is certainly l'chumra, because Beit Shammai is saying, I don't care how big the guy is, he's going to be chayev on Yom Kippur for just the shear of one revias. And Masha Enkein, Beis Hillel is saying, no, if he's a very big person, he's going to have to fill his entire mouth. So in the context of that question, it's obvious that Beit Shammai is being much more machmer. Matkif lo Rabbi Zera, I don't understand this whole deal. How come when it comes to the shear of how much you eat, everybody has the same shear of how much to eat? Everybody, we said, kotevet agasa. And yet when it comes to drinking, the Mishnah gives us this variable shear that is a function of every individual's personal body size. I mean, does that make sense? The kochad v'chad v'didei? Omele abaye? Yes, absolutely. Because look, kimlu l'rabbanan b'kikotevet, d'ba'achim yatve daite, b'otzim l'achim lo miyatve. The Rabbanan, remember, have been omed on the fact that a kotevet is what takes off the sharpness of the pain of the inui. And it doesn't matter who it is that's going to eat that kotevet. But when it comes to drinking, a person doesn't really feel that he's had a drink unless he's had that melolugmav in his own mouth. And I'm sure you've had that experience as well. To have a drink is a drink that you feel that you're actually swallowing something that is completely filling you. So there only But a chavre, to say that you should be satisfied with someone who is smaller than you, with the amount of liquid that would have been in his mouth, lo miat v'daita. Matki flo Rabbi Zera, it doesn't make sense to me. You're telling me that kol olam kulo b'kotevet. So normal people, I understand there's a little bit of variation among people. Let's say there's a variation of 20, 30%, okay? I can say that. Now you're telling me that we're talking about Og Melech HaBashan. Okay, Og Melech HaBashan, again, obviously it's not silly to be referred to Og Melech HaBashan, but you're telling me that something that is completely an outlier on any chart, that we're going to say that outliers are also defined entirely by their own Melod Lugmav? I mean, I can understand standard variations. I don't understand outliers. How would that be included? Omele Abaye, well, put that in your cheek and drink it. Kimlu l'rabbanan debahachi miyat v'dayte. I don't know what your problem is. If, in fact, the sense of satisfaction that comes of drinking is a function of the musculature and the structure of the throat and so on and so forth of that individual, then that's the way it is. You're telling me, but I mean, it's a totally different amount of liquid. That's true. I'm not saying that the result will be the same, okay? If you have that amount that is also going to be the immense amount that Og Melech HaBashan is going to drink, so fine. So Kulei Alma will be Tuva. Maybe everyone else is going to be, you know, very, very happy with that amount. Og Melech HaBashan, you're right. He needs a lot more. But Lamaisa, I mean, according to what it is that Beit Shammai is holding, if he would eat, here we're talking about, let's say, in the Achila, right? So we're talking about the Achila of a Kikotevet. So how do you explain that? You've got people that are normal size, and they feel that they're not hungry after a Kotevet. And Og Melech HaBashan is going to feel not hungry after a kotevet when he normally, his meal would be 10,000 kotevets. I mean, and your meal would be 5 kotevot. How does that make sense? And Abaye says it makes sense. There is a minimal shear of miyat v'daite. And then the question is, how much miyat v'daite? I agree, there's differences in the level of miyat v'daite, but there is a sense of miyat v'daite. So you're right. Og Melech HaBashan will say, man, I'm still hungry. But nonetheless, there's a miyat v'daite of taking off the sharpness even from the kotevet. So again, Rabbi Zera says, I mean, you're telling me it doesn't matter? The guy has a kotevet worth, I mean, it says you can eat anything, right? So you're telling me a guy has a kotevet worth of this thick, delicious steak, right? And another guy has a kotevet worth of beanstalks, you know? So you're telling me it's going to be the same shear. Does it make sense to you? That Basar Shamein Bekotevet and Lulvege Fanima Bekotevet, says Abaye patiently, exactly the same thing. Yes. The shear is a kotevet. Less than that, you are not going to feel that you've taken off the edge of your hunger. Obviously, if you eat the steak, you're going to feel a lot of Yituve Daita. And if you eat the beans, you're going to feel very little. Okay, I understand. Lulege Fani Purta.
Maybe I protest. It's the fatty meat.
Matkifla Rava. Kizayit Pichte Achilas Pras. Vekotevet Pichte Achilas Pras. How is it that the Tosefta says it's the same shear? I mean, if a kotevet is so much larger, don't we need more time to be able to eat up the kotevet? And yet you're giving me exactly the same amount of time. That's a machlokas, whether that is the chatzi, are we talking about that the chatzi process 3 beitzim or 4 beitzim, or whatever it is, I mean, if you're a kotevet, you should need much more time. Omalei Abaye, still patiently, kim lul rabbanan debachi miyat v'dayte. It's exactly the same issue. That is the shear. Okay, says Rava, and if we get to the idea of Tumas Gvia, which I mentioned to you before, so you're telling me the shear of a kotevet is Bichtei Achilas Pras. But the shear of a Chatzi Pras, which is the amount that you would have to eat in order to be Matame, your goof, to be Osir, to be touching Truma. So that, to be eating Truma, I mean, so that would be a Chatzi Pras. You're telling me a chatzi pras is bichtei achilas pras? I mean, that's totally out of range, right? So how does that make sense? You're giving me the same amount of time for eating 50% of the thing as you're eating a much smaller kotevet, which is less than even one beitza. How is that possible? Amarle Rav Papa, what do you mean how it's possible? That's tumat gvia, you know, tumat gvia, that whole thing is not a deraisa. What? It's not a deraisa? Rav Papa holds that tumat gvia is not a deraisa. Rav Papa is the one who darshans tumat gvia from the pasuk. The aktiv, doesn't it say in the pasuk specifically that al tishaktsu et nafshotechem b'chol asheretz hashoreitz v'lo titam'u behem v'nitmeitem b'am? So what do you mean? Lo titam'u behem v'nitmeitem b'am? Tainas Rav Papa. Oh, you see what that means? That if you end up eating them, you will become tameh. So Mikan says, Rav Papa shetumas gvia d'araisa. No, says, come on, how could you believe that there's anything that a person could eat except for the big chiddush of the Torah of eating a nevela of an Ov Tahar? Over there, it's possible for a person to become tameh through eating, but that's because that's the din of the Tumas nevela, and that's the only time that we find such a thing. So you really believe that Rav Papa held that eating ochlin could be metameyu when a person is only becoming tameh from an avatuma? Of course it's drabbanim. What Rav Papa meant is that the pasuk is an esmachta bi'alma to the din of the halach of tumas gvia. Now the next thing we said in the Mishnah is that all of the ochlin are mitstarfin b'shi'ir kikotevet. So Rav Papa says when we say ochlin are mitstarfin, even if you ate a piece of meat that has salt on the meat, and without the salt, it would not be the shear. The meat and the salt are mitzarif. Now, even though if you would eat stam salt, that's not called achila. But kivan da'achli inzi, since you put it together in a way that they normally are eaten together, the salt on the meat for the flavor, then it is mitzarif. Another example of that yisod is Rish Lakish. Tzir shagabe yerek. If you've got some kind of salt and water or dressing that is on top of a vegetable, that would be considered also a kikotevet biyom ha-kipurim. Well, why not? Pshita. Well, that's because ma'al detema mashkehu. I would have thought, look, I mean, even if what we just said was true, that the way people eat it is considered to be mitzarif, but over here it's a liquid, and a liquid is a completely different shiur, and you're not mitzarif things that are different shiurim. Kamash malam, therefore, Rish Lakish is coming to tell me, kol achshurei uchla is uchlo. Anything that makes the food tasty food, and it's the way that you would want to eat it, that is considered to be ochlin.